Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I am culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very pleased to be joined today by Mark Cousins, who is a great, I would describe as almost legendary documentarian. Everyone loves the story of film and Odyssey. This was huge amongst my friend group. And I think it helped reorient how people thought about what they were watching on film, which is a thing I want to really dive into. Okay. With you here today, Mr. Cousins, thanks for being on the show.
Pleasure, Sonny. I'm glad to be here.
But we're here to talk about his new documentary, My Name is Alfred Hitchcock, which is about the films, again, fairly obviously, the films of Alfred Hitchcock. And there's kind of an interesting conceit here. Let's discuss the elephant in the room as we get started, which is the recreation, the rebirthing of Alfred Hitchcock as narrator, as a little bit of film tricksterism here. Why did you choose to have an actor voice a script that was, you know, that you wrote, but you have kind of put in the voice of Alfred Hitchcock?
You know, Hitchcock is for the ages in a way. You know, he was one of the people who thought what cinema is. And so I wanted to imagine what it would be like to for Hitchcock to come to the era of TikTok, the 21st century in our modern life, and for him to look back at his own career and think, how relevant is it to the 21st century?
It's interesting that you mention TikTok in this mode, because I was that when you were editing this together, when you edit your things together, do you think about how modern audiences are watching clips of bits and pieces of things and putting them together and drawing juxtapositions? What's your theory of TikTok, if you have one?
I think TikTok is like any art form. TikTok is in some ways like the Lumiere films that were made in 1895, some of the first films ever made, you know, where you see somebody cycling along a street or a baby eating some food or something. And when you look at TikTok, some of my favorite ones are people saying, look, here's some Chinese takeout that I've just had and I'm eating it. You know, it's like, of course, there's loads of rubbish on TikTok, but a lot of it is about saying something like, I'm alive, I'm with my friends, we're eating Chinese food. You know, so that sort of quite simple pleasures in life is where TikTok comes from. But the reason why I mentioned TikTok and the relationship with Alfred Hitchcock was that he had a great sense of humor. You know, as you know, Sonny, he did these little short advertisements for his films, little moments where he would pretend to do something funny, and they're sort of TikTok-y in a way, you know. So mm-hmm. I think he would have understood this short comic form very well.
Well, let's talk about Alfred Hitchcock as a cultural phenomenon, because there are a lot of directors that this simply would not have worked for. You could not imagine, frankly, the vast majority of directors being recognizable enough, being, you know, well known enough by audiences, both in terms of appearance and sound, for a film like this to work. What was it about Hitchcock that turned him into such a cultural phenomenon?
Well, I think you're right, Sonny. You know, like before Hitchcock, there was Charlie Chaplin, and he was super famous. But in terms of directors, you can go Chaplin, Hitchcock, Spielberg, you know, in terms of household recognition. One of the reasons that he was so famous in his own times, and we're talking from the 1930s to the 1970s roughly, is that he used himself as a kind of logo, as a kind of brand recognition. You know, that famous profile, the advertising we've already mentioned, his TV show. And then, of course, famously, he appeared momentarily in lots of his films. He was interested in his own branding, in his own reputation, in his own sense of voice, as it were, you know, and therefore, when you said to the audience, you know, you're going to see a Hitchcock film, they sort of knew what they expected because of the way that he worked this marketing machine of himself.
The advertising is fascinating to me because it creates almost a bargain with the audience that that the fourth wall is very flexible, that there is I think part of it was he understood he was bringing audiences into the film. And there's a moment in your documentary where you talk about him doing just that, bringing audiences through the threshold of a door into the film. How conscious was he of that idea of a film as a thing that you bring people into and let them experience?
I think very much so. You know, he famously said, you know, if you come to see one of my movies, you have to, you know, drive somewhere. You have to maybe pay a babysitter. You know, you're entering into a space like a theater. You know, famously he said, you're not allowed to get into Psycho once the film has started. He was very interested in the threshold, getting into a movie, sitting down, you know, forgetting the world's troubles, forgetting the rest of your life, and doing something else. And the something else he was really interested in, which is digging into your own fears and desires. You know, and he's an entertainer, obviously, and he wanted you to pay back then $2 or whatever to see a film. But he really wanted to say to us, you know, you have an inner world of desire and fear, which you deny or you minimize, and I'm now going to maximize it. You know, how exciting! You know, because we need to feel alive in some way and not pretend. And Hitchcock made us feel alive.
Yeah, it made us feel alive by kind of frequently bringing forth the specter of death. I mean, there is the whole death drive thing. I want to talk, just bringing it very briefly back to the decision to voice, to kind of bring Hitchcock back to life. I will say that as I was watching it, I did get the, wait, is this AI question? Is this, and I know, I'm sure that's something you're getting a lot on this press tour. Was there ever any notion of doing something like that, you know, recreating his voice through his own speeches or anything? Or was this always like, we're doing this the old fashioned way? We're gonna get an actor who sounds like him and can do the Hitchcock thing?
Yeah, I mean, I always knew I wanted to get an actual actor in the real world, you know, because AI is interesting, you know, it's a tool, lots of bad things, lots of good things. I don't think it can do comedy very well. I don't think it can do humor and jokes. And there are jokes in this film, you know, it's sort of, Hitchcock was a playful character, you know, he was funny. And in the film, there's funny as well, you know, and so we needed a real person. And the real person is this brilliant man called Alistair McGowan, who's well known here in the UK. And just to see him put his phlegm up into his throat and person, and, you know, it was a joy to behold. And I've said it many times, but I've worked with Jane Fonda and Tilda Swinton and many of the best in the business. But to see this tall, skinny man, the opposite of Hitchcock, standing in a tiny recording studio in England and bring Hitchcock alive was dazzling to watch.
And it really is, it's pretty shocking to listen to if you watch this. I hope you get a chance to check it out in a theater where you can really where it can dominate your field of view and also your hearing. Let's talk a little bit about the script writing process, because again, you've written it in the voice of Alfred Hitchcock, but of course this is not something he wrote. It was something else. Were you what was your process like here? Were you drawing from long form interviews, stuff like Hitchcock Truffaut? Where was it from his other sources, or was this just you writing kind of in his voice?
Yeah, to be honest, the latter, Sonny. I had, like many Hitchcock fans, I'd seen read the Hitchcock Truffaut book a number of times, and so I think if you're a real film fan, isn't there some way that Hitchcock's in your head? He's always in your head, you know? So I didn't need to do much research. Everything I say in the film is broadly true, like mostly true, like everything that this fictional Hitchcock says is very close to what he really thought. But I didn't want to go back and sort of steal lines of dialogue from him or something like that. It was more liberated than that. I felt as if I was writing a radio play in some way, where Hitchcock talks about himself. And that was an exciting thing to do, and it was liberating creatively, because as you and I know, there have been loads and loads of books about Hitchcock and films, and I had to do something a bit wilder, a bit more daring than that.
Yeah, and this there's a version of this movie that's a fairly standard talking head sort of thing, or that that you narrate, and that it's something we've seen before. This is not something we've seen before. This is new and interesting and exciting and kind of daring, frankly. I mean, there has to be some concern on your part that you're overreaching here. That I think it works.
Thank you. I mean, it's better to overreach than underreach, isn't it? We see so much that underreaches, And when it was first publicized in, I think, Variety or something, that I was making this film, I got a message from the lawyer of the Hitchcock estate, who's a very nice man, and I know in another circumstance, because I made a film about Orson Welles, and it's the same lawyer. So the lawyer said, Hitchcock's granddaughters have heard that you're making this film, which is a kind of impersonation of Hitchcock, and they're very interested. And I thought, well, they're going to see it at some point, so why don't I send them the rough cut? So I sent them a link to the rough cut with some trepidation, and then I heard their response,
which was
very nice.
Oh, that's good. That's good, because it, look, you don't want this to come across as negative, as attacking him. It's not. It's a very much a love letter to Hitchcock and his work. And that's, that brings me to a broader question about Alfred Hitchcock, which is, what do you think he offers modern audiences? I hear from younger movie watchers who are like, well, I only watch new stuff. I only watch modern movies. Old movies are boring. I don't watch those. And this is a trick I learned in college myself, which is our professor. The first segment was, all right, here, you think you don't like old movies. Here is Shadow of a Doubt and Psycho and Rear Window, I think it was. Tell me you don't like old movies after watching this. What is it that Hitchcock brings to modern audiences that they see and can identify with and help introduce them to some of the more classic cinema?
Desire and fear, I think. Hitchcock is brilliant at connecting desire and fear, these beautiful people, they're, Ingrid Bergman and Cary Grant, and then connecting that, those kind of glamorous human beings, to something that we sometimes don't admit, that we're, the fear of death, etc. It's big stuff he's dealing with, and you're asking about younger audiences. Maybe young people haven't yet started thinking about death, but Hitchcock did, and that's a great thing. These are entertainment. Hitchcock, when you're sitting in a movie theater, watching a Hitchcock film, you feel safe because you're in a theater, but also you're like, if you're Janet Leigh in Psycho, you know, if you're Ingrid in Notorious, if you're Jimmy in Vertigo, you are, you know, the honesty of this stuff about how vulnerable these people are, how scared they are, how alive they are. Hitchcock captures all of that, I think.
Yeah. Stylistically too, he's interesting in that his camera is it's constantly on the move. He is, I think, maybe slightly more modern in that sense, that he is moving around. But one of the things I love about this movie, and again, some of your previous work, is that it is a reminder, and one I find that I myself need sometimes as a person who writes about film, a reminder to look at the actual stylistic techniques of what is happening on film. How do you, as a documentarian who is interested in this sort of thing, retrain audiences to look at not the story that is being told, but how it is being told, to draw their attention to the thing that is happening beyond the thing?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, to be honest, I don't want to retrain is slightly too aggressive in a way, you know what I mean? You know, all I want to do is to say, look how beautiful this is. Look how magnificent this is. And because I'm a more visual person than other things, then I can use whatever abilities I have to say to people, you know, yes, everything about Psycho is amazing, but that middle section where it's not scary is also beautiful. And I think that what's great about Hitchcock is that he, you know, we conventionally think that cinema is about story and character, story and psychology, but what if there are other things going on? Think of North by Northwest, you know, what if it's a kind of road movie, etc. And there are loads of people listening to this who will be those of us who are more interested in like form or the visual excitement of the world. And Hitchcock really, really is one of our gang. As a result, you know, you can see he's in our gang.
Could you talk about some specific instances of that and how he moves through his films to bring that excitement to people? Because I think it really is the thing that always jumps out at me when I revisit some of these older Hitchcock movies, is just how in motion they are, how frequently he is going places and doing things, and like, again, doing things with the camera that feel even today kind of fresh and modern and exciting.
Well, you think of, take them, one of the most famous Hitchcock films, Vertigo. When Jimmy Stewart first sees Kim Novak, do you remember that scene, you know? And mm-hmm. He, you know, it's about desire. It's a slightly older man desiring a younger woman, right? But much more than that, it's about the color. The walls are red. Her dress is green. You know, there's an intensity of that. If it was a more neutral environment, if it was more documentary style, it wouldn't have worked. The colors and that famous moment where the camera goes around his head, they express everything. And so it's more like being a painter in some way. And Hitchcock was brilliant as a super entertainer, as a really popular entertainer, really understood how color would work in this environment. And there are loads and loads of examples of that. Like at the ending of Notorious. Notorious is like the only Hitchcock film at which I always cry. And so Ingrid Bergman is playing, as you know, this sort of, you know, she's an infiltrator into aspiring, and she's been drugged, and she thinks her life is over. And then Cary Grant shows up and she says, you love me, Hitchcock, people think of Hitchcock as quite cold and not emotional, but the way the camera works in that famous scene at the end of Notorious is so entrancing that it shows that Hitchcock had an emotional wisdom that we don't always recognize.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.
Why is that? Because that is a you do I do hear that from time to time that Hitchcock is cold. He doesn't care about people. He doesn't. He's a. It's a similar knock that you hear on Nolan sometimes and Fincher and other directors. But I think with Hitchcock in particular, I mean his movies are so frequently love stories, like actual love stories, that it has always felt like such an unfair, weird knock.
Yeah, I think it's partly due to him. You know, he marketed himself as this sort of detached, observer of, the Death Wish. But yeah, you're totally right. They are love stories. Like Rear Window is a love story. Notorious is a love story. I would say Saboteur is a love story. Well, it is a love story. So Hitchcock, and you remember that. Hitchcock's relationship with Alma, his wife, was so powerful, and Patricia Hitchcock, his daughter, wrote a beautiful book about his relationship with with her mother. And so we forget about the more human side of Hitchcock, I think, and it's there in the movies, but we're so ex we just loved him for scaring us that we sometimes miss the more human qualities. Like there's a scene, when Janet Leigh first gets to the house in Psycho, there's a you know they're really those two people are really communing with each other, talking about loneliness a lot, loneliness a lot, and then of course, a terrible thing happens in the shower, but there's a lot of humanity in Hitchcock.
Yeah. And in your movie, again, the name of this documentary is My Name is Alfred Hitchcock. It's in theaters now. People should track it down if they can. I assume it'll be on VOD in short order as well. But if you can see it in theaters, you should. I want to talk a little bit about the shifting gears slightly, just the actual compilation of material of getting everything that you needed for this picture, because there's a combination of obviously footage from his films, which I'm curious to know what you sourced from where, but also just shooting new material. You went to his hometown in England and shot around there. When you're mixing that professional and personal life stuff. What were you trying to emphasize for viewers? What were you trying to give them to show? Here is who Hitchcock was. This is what it meant in his movies.
Yeah, that's a good question, Sonny. I think for me, the answer to that is like when somebody becomes super famous, and Hitchcock was super famous, they become depersonalized. It looks as if they're hovering in a sort of celebrity zone, and they came from nowhere. But everybody comes from somewhere. So I wanted to go back to Leytonstone in the northeast of London, where Hitchcock came from, and just look at the streets, and start with some kind of reality. And he was obviously an imaginative, he was a great imaginative figure, but his imagination comes from somewhere, and I wanted to show that place, I think. And there's a particular scene in his his brilliant film, The 39 Steps, where he imagines Scotland. I'm talking from Scotland now, and so I know the real Scotland. And again, I wanted to go to the place that he imagines and then show the reality, because often cinema in some way is about the difference between reality and fantasy, reality and imagination, reality and dream. And so that's a film like this, you want to get into that area and show the difference.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is, it's a fascinating contrast, the real area versus the kind of in-studio reality that he created. When you were so to bring it back one step, the when you were compiling the archive footage, were you pulling from 4K transfer? I have a very basic building blocks question here. When you're putting together the film, were you pulling together from 4K discs? What was the actual process like?
My producer is really good. He's very technical, and so I said, okay, if I'm going to do this film, I'm going to I need to see everything at high quality, in chronological order. So I know we're on audio here, but I'm going to show you. I'm making the sound of a flicking book. Can you hear the sound of a flicking book? So what I did was I watched every film in order from the very first Pleasure Garden 1925 to Family Plot 1976, so 50 years. And my producer provided me with high-res files of everything, and I sat at the computer which I'm sitting at now, and I watched everything in order. And you know, sometimes when you know, you think everybody thinks they know Hitchcock, but watching these 53 films in order was revelatory for me in some ways, because I discovered that I'd seen some films I didn't see before, but always the highest res. Most of the films have been restored, so they're really high res. And what a joy, what a great job I have to be paid to watch these films and then come up with that kind of reading of them, a new approach to them.
When you were watching them all, and I assume you watch them all in order, and then you write your script, and then you pull the clips, or was it a different process? Did you like pick out clips as you were watching and be like, oh, I need to do a segment on this, or how did that work?
Different process, you know. So I decided in advance what the themes were, because as you referred to earlier, there's been loads done on Hitchcock, so I didn't want to repeat what was said before. So I've got another sheet of paper here, and on it scribbled sheet of paper, it says desire, loneliness, time, aging, escape, etc. And I scribbled those themes before I started rewatching the Hitchcock pictures. And I thought, when I watch these films, I'll only look at for these themes, nothing else. Because everybody's talked about the thriller in Hitchcock and the religion in Hitchcock. So if I'll only look at desire, loneliness, fulfillment, time, etc., then they will come alive in a new way. And that's exactly what happened. So as I was watching them, I was only looking for those themes and then noting them down, noting the moment down. So by the end of the process of watching all the films, I'd chosen my clips. And I never write a script in advance. It's always a mistake as a filmmaker. If you write a script in advance, then you're just trying to, use the imagery as a kind of wallpaper. But you don't want to do that. You know, you want the... So I'm at the computer that I'm talking to you now, I sit and watch the scene from any Hitchcock film and write to the scene. So I always write to the image.
Do you put the sequences together in what you think the order will be before you start writing? Or do you write each sequence and then kind of bring it all together?
The structure comes first. You know, I think it's really, you know, when you work in low budget, which I do, you can't waste. Some filmmakers spent a year in the edit suite, you know, like finding the structure. But for me, it always comes first. So again, another visual thing, which yeah, I'm showing you on camera here. I've gone out of focus. But so I did a series of lunch boxes. And so this one says fulfillment. And this is a sandwich box that you might put a sandwich in. And in this box, I put everything, lots and lots of little notes about the theme of fulfillment of Hitchcock, and I knew where this sequence would come in the film, and then I open this box and then use that to write that sequence. So structure, and I think anybody listening to this, if they are a filmmaker or something, like, structure is everything, and the structure of this film came first.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I know structure is,
you know,
80% of the battle.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I find it very hard. You know, I'm sure there are more talented people than me. I can't structure something and then write the detail at the same time. So the structure comes first. Once you've sorted that out, then you're free and happy.
What was your biggest surprise as you were going through the movies and looking for these connections and thematic through lines? What was your biggest surprise? What was the moment you were like, oh, I had never realized that before about Hitchcock in his movies?
I think Rope. You know, Rope is considered a lesser Hitchcock in a way, you know, but I think it's really relevant today. You know, it's a film about fascism in some ways, you know, so I think that, you know, I think that for me to, you know, it's the fact that these two young men kill somebody because they were taught a kind of, you know, almost fascist idea by their tutor, played by Jimmy Stewart, and their tutor says, no, that's not what I meant. You know, so Hitchcock was quite a political guy, you know, and I think Rope is unbelievably brilliant, and I didn't realize that, you know. And I think that it's the more political side of Hitchcock, the more human side of Hitchcock was the discovery for me.
Yeah, interesting. That was pretty much everything I had wanted to ask. Again, the name of the movie is My Name is Alfred Hitchcock. I always like to close these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked, if you think there's anything folks should know about your film, about Alfred Hitchcock, about the art of, you know, documentary or, you know, cinema visual essays in general. What should I have asked that I did not that people should know about?
Well, I'd rather ask you a question. What's your favorite Hitchcock film?
Shadow of a Doubt. Has always been my answer to this, because it is I love the idea of it as the kind of first noir, but also before noir, really, like the kind of setting the scene for distrust in the whole family, you know, life, American situation. And also just because Joseph Cotten gives a dynamite performance. I love that performance even more than Citizen Kane. I think it's just magnificent.
I was lucky enough to know Teresa Wright, who's in that picture, you know, as you know. So I spent time with her in Scotland. What is the most moving Hitchcock film for you? What's the one which is the most emotional?
Oh, boy, that's a, you know, I've not thought of that question in that specific way. I think it's actually Rear Window. I think it's Rear Window and Jimmy Stewart kind of realizing how into him Grace Kelly is, kind of slowly, and realizing what he has lost by her going into that that building across the way. That kind of that realization on his face is the has always really stuck with me as kind of a powerful image of love on film.
And he's not attracted to her until he sees her risk taking. Isn't that fascinating? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she's obviously beautiful, but he is really excited by her once he sees her risk taking. Who is the most beautiful person in any Hitchcock film for you?
Well, I kind of have to go Grace Kelly in Rear Window. She is magnificent. And I know there are some folks who will say Vertigo, and it doesn't The actress in Vertigo, whose name Kim Novak, is that who I'm thinking of? Yeah. But Grace Kelly is just, very, very alluring.
Okay. That's a good way to end, is it?
I think that's great. Thank you. I always like it when the questions get turned back on me. That's fun. That's a fun way to close things out. Mr. Cousins, thank you for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thank you, Sonny.
And again, my name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and we will be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.